And away we go. GM's week around Sportsnet, whether it's the expansion draft, the NHL draft, and then next week free agency. All eyes on the general managers as they make decisions that impact not just their franchises, but others as well. Welcome to Hockey Central. Jeff Merrick alongside Anthony Stewart, Justin Bourne, bottom of the hour, Jeff Baker, Seattle Times, will talk to us about the most interesting team in the NHL universe. From throwing fish to making picks, that's a couple of the areas of discussion today. We'll talk a lot about the Seattle Kraken today with the expansion draft on the horizon tomorrow. Justin, Stewie, good afternoon. Nice to be back with you guys. We're going to go through this sort of little experiment here, this thought experiment towards the bottom of the hour, where we go through, because we thought doing a complete expansion list would just be too time onerous. So we'll go through what we think the Canadian teams will be doing and then sort of cherry pick through the remainder of the NHL. But before we get there, Borny, we'll start with you. And it's nice to be back on with you, by the way, Justin. Welcome home
too,
from
buddy.
Kelowna. What's most intriguing to you about the expansion draft this year?
I think what's going on in Montreal is probably it. I'll also just... all getting to know what Seattle is about and what they want to be about, right? Like, we're going to learn their strategy and their plan here in the coming days. And there's so many different ways you can go at this. Like, if you're someone who's been following expansion draft conversations and what you think they should do, I mean, it could be win now, it can be aim for later, it can be stockpile assets, it can be save cap space. There's just a million different ways you can go in it. So I just think it's really fascinating to see what the people involved have chosen to do. Because again, huge plethora of options out there.
What do you think?
Yeah, there's
Stu,
a lot. Yeah, there's a lot of options up there. Absolutely, and I think Ron Francis has a choice here. Like, does he go for it the first year, or do you build assets to try to possibly, you know, try to build down the line or get some prized free agents here? Because you can make a team that's right up against the cap. You can put a team that's right up against the floor. But the one thing I think everybody can agree upon is that this is going to be a really competitive team, just with the names that are out there. And I know there's some contracts that some teams are going to get that want to get rid of. But there's some players that are exposed that can step in and be quality National Hockey League players.
Well, let's get right to the one where, I mean, listen, the entire city's on fire, and it's a topic of discussion, and Borny mentioned it off the top here, the Montreal Canadiens. And the big story and the big question is Carey Price. Like, anyone who puts together a mock draft for the expansion, I'm convinced, wants to say Carey Price. Just for the chaos factor, just for the story factor, just because of what that means, not just for Seattle, but for Montreal as well. The safe play is probably Cale Fleury, but the sexy play is Carey Price. Justin, who do you have Seattle taking from Montreal?
I am undeniably safe and not sexy, Jeff. I am Cale Fleury all the way. I'm not the guy who's there for the Price contract and age and injury history, and it's all too much to me. It's too much potential disaster. Like, the upside is you win a cup in year one or two, and I think that's such a small percentage of possible. It's just not worth it to me. So Cale Fleury is a nice defenseman. I think that's a safe one. And you guys, anyone sexy in the group?
I'm going Paul Byron.
That's not sexy either.
A couple seasons. Again, and you meet guys with some cost certainty there. He's got 3.4 cap hit, I think another 2 years. And everyone's saying, well, how do we know that, Price isn't going to Seattle? Because he's not going. If he decides he's not going, he's not going. So I'm sure they worked something out in the back rooms of Montreal and Seattle that, you know, he's probably not going there. It's probably going to be another player other than Price.
You know, I'll go sexy with you then, Justin, because I can see the Seattle Kraken taking Carey Price. Because when we always say, when we ask the question, is Seattle interested? I think we need to consider what Seattle is. We're just focusing on hockey operations, and we're not considering ownership, and we're not considering marketing, and we're not considering face of the franchise, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This is an expansion team. This is a team that, I mean, right away already the logo, the brand, the organization has a certain identity, but we haven't put a face to it yet. And I don't want to draw too many similarities between what could happen with Carey Price in Seattle and what has happened in Vegas with Marc-Andre Fleury. However, familiar with the area, wife from Tri-Cities, he played with the Americans, grew up in that part of the world. can still play. I mean, the medicals are the medicals. You have the battery with Chris Drieger. Maybe I'm just trying to will this into happening just because Seattle is having a real thought about this. And one of the things, Elliot and I talked about this on the podcast last night, one of the things that we haven't considered here is, does Carey Price want to go to Seattle? And here's why I at least think that he's fine with it. The fact that, well, there's a couple of things. One, I don't believe that Carey Price is frivolous with his career. That's why I don't think the agreeing to waive your no move is just let's see what happens here. I think that if you're Carey Price, at least a part of you has to be okay with the idea of going to Seattle. If not, just fine with the idea of going to Seattle as a family decision. Now, I understand the salary cap ramifications for this one. $10.5 million goaltender. Ron Francis has talked a lot about wanting salary cap space, wants that flexibility, wants as much as they're allowed to spend to the salary cap by way of ownership. This is still a team that wants to have some flexibility through the year and certainly up until the trade deadline. So I'm both talking myself into this and talking myself out of it at the same time, which is really why this is, and I think for a lot of people as well, the most interesting decision come Wednesday. Yeah, I think we'd all love it to happen for the chaos reasons. Cale Fleury's a safe one. Paul Byron's a safe one. But man, do I want Seattle to take Carey Price.
My contribution to what you're just saying there that I'll just add is, I don't believe for a second that there's be anything from ownership about the idea of a face of the franchise, a name guy. I just don't believe that to be true. First off, I think your first couple of years in the expansion team is you're playing with house money. Everyone's excited to have you. Everyone's buying tickets. Everyone's buying jerseys. I don't think that anyone's, you know, needs a big name to get their attention out of the gates. The other thing is, you know, I think, Jeff, you mentioned this on the podcast. I did listen to that. You know, jersey sales are a collective pool of money shared amongst the NHL teams, right? That's not the team's own revenue. What isn't shared among the league necessarily, depending how much you make, I guess, is gate. And I think what they want to do is win and win Stanley Cup playoff games and win rounds and get more home gates, play into the second round, the third round, the fourth round. I believe that the ownership says to their team, give us the best chance to play in the Stanley Cup finals deep. That is a priority over a name guy. So I don't think the face thing plays into it. The rest of those points, totally valid ones. I'm with you that he's probably okay with going.
Okay, so there's Montreal, and we do have to hustle through this. Jeff Baker, you know, can shed some more light on this towards the bottom of the hour. It's a Toronto-based radio show. Toronto Maple Leafs, your options, the heavyweights, McCann, Kerfoot, Dermott. Which way are you going, Borny? Hello, Justin?
Video. Hey, guys.
There you go.
Okay, I vow to remain on mute for the rest of my duration on this show. The
Hollow
fish
promises,
video.
You've made it before.
I know. Have you seen the fish video leaked on Twitter?
Yes. Yes, I have. Alex Kerfoot. Okay.
Yes. Alex Kerfoot has been – there's a video of Kevin Weeks announcing the Kerfoot pick. So for me, I would take Travis Dermott. I just think that 2 years at 1.5 each year for a guy who can play both sides at his age, his defensive ability, I think there's more to his career that's yet to come. I just think you would have a D-man for a long time if you did take Dermott.
What do you think, Stewie?
I think we've got to start reading between the lines a little bit more, too. And just going back to Montreal before I go to Toronto here, if they take Chris Drieger, which is a foregone conclusion that he's going to be signing there, why would you bring in Carey Price, too? Why would Toronto trade for McCann with Pittsburgh if they weren't planning on losing a forward? So I don't think, you know, the way the NHL works, are you going to trade for a guy just to lose him? There's the respect factor. I know it's a business, but I don't think you're going to trade a guy just to lose him. So I'm sure there might be some backroom deals, like I mentioned before, that Kerfoot's the one guy out of there because they're going to slide McCann in. So I'm going with Kerfoot gone for Toronto.
I'll take McCann in this one. I think that's was me. Younger, cheaper, is a shooting threat more so than Alex Kerfoot. I do think they're going forward from the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'll take Jared McCann over Alex Kerfoot. To the other Ontario team, and what's jumping out here at me are three names. Chris Cherney, Evgeny Dadonov, and Joey Decord. Borny, you taking one of those three, or are you going off the board?
No, I am. I'm taking Tierney. I think, you know, not a huge wealth to select from there, but, you know, good age, good contract, and a guy that I think, if asked to do less farther down your lineup, could be a valuable player.
I'm going Dadonov. I know the price tag's a little heavy at $5 million for the next two seasons, but this guy's a 28 goal scorer. He scored 25, 28, 28 his last 3 years with Florida before coming to Ottawa. So I'm going Dadonov at $5 million.
I would not be surprised if they end up taking Joey Decord. I would not be surprised if Seattle ends up taking a number of netminders and ends up moving a couple of them. Having said all that, I'm going to go the Justin way as well, and maybe it's just a safe pick, and I've been saying it all year long, so damn it, I'm going to keep saying it now. Chris Cherney, Seattle Kraken from the Ottawa Senators. Winnipeg Jets, Dylan DeMello or Mason Appleton? Are those the two decisions, Justin?
They are, and... you know, both really good picks. I really like Mason Appleton. That makes this a hard pick for me. But I mentioned him first because DeMello just seems like the guy, doesn't he? Like, this guy's established himself as a top four defenseman at a good age. Yeah. I think he's a great fit for Seattle.
Yeah, I'm going to go DeMello too, and I'm surprised that they left him exposed as opposed to Logan Stanley. And Logan Stanley's a big, strong D with a bright future too. So I see DeMello stepping in and having instant success for Seattle next season.
We talked about Montreal. I'm going DeMello on this one too. As much as I love Mason Appleton, I'm going DeMello, just knowing how valuable defensemen like that are in the NHL. And speaking of which, I guess the only question about who they take from Calgary is, do they keep him or do they move him? And that's Mark Giordano. Are we all on the same page here, or is someone Hot Take Tuesday guy? Stewie's giving me the thumbs up in our group video chat. What about you, Borny? It's Tuesday after all.
No, I'm with Giordano too. By the way, no disrespect to our Canadian friends here or anything, but these are some of the leaner teams to select from league-wide, were they not?
I don't know.
I mean, Giordano's
pretty juicy. Ottawa's sort of thin. I like
Vancouver,
what you're
going to
get from Winnipeg. Vancouver is, that's going to come to like McEwen or Cole Lind. Edmonton's thin as well, but Calgary hands you someone that you can either help to build a blue line around or trade right away or trade at trade deadline, depending on
I guess it just means not a choice there, Jeff. That one's just like, yeah, there's one guy, yeah. That's the guy.
Yeah, there's to me that's the obvious. Like, if you're ever on a radio show, guys, and people say, okay, which is the obvious one? Like, who should look to buy real estate in Seattle? It's Mark Giordano, unless the Kraken are going to turn around and trade the guy right away. And the sexy play there is he gets traded to the Edmonton Oilers. Boom, hockey Twitter explodes. Speaking of the Oilers, what do we do with Edmonton here? Borny, who do you got?
I got Jujhar Kara. I'm not sure that anyone else you're choosing from is going to be an NHL player, and I'm certain that Jujhar Kara is. So, you know, I know I was leaning. I thought Cahoon for a little bit. Which way did you guys end up going?
I ended up going Tyler Benson. Again, he played for Bakersfield last year, point a game in the minors. And again, you can't necessarily have all roster players all the time. You got to have some assets. I could see him being a valuable depth asset for Seattle. Tyler Benson.
The three that I wrestle with here, Benson was one of them. Cooper Marody was the other one, but I ended up going with Jujhar Kara as well, just as far as being versatile, wing, center, toughness, all of it, bottom six, know the role. I went Jujhar Kara from Edmonton, which brings us to Vancouver. This was a... you know, there are some teams where Seattle might just kind of take a pass by taking a player whose contract is about to expire so they can just move on. Vancouver is a tough one. It comes down for me to Zach McEwen and Cole Lind. I went with Zach McEwen. Which way did you go, Barney?
You know, I kind of like Matthew Highmore. I know that's not exactly on the radar. He's not the sexiest pick, but I do like Highmore. I think McEwen's probably the way to go in the end, is the safer pick. But I just feel like, as a guy who can play down your lineup, someone's got to be cheap. Matthew Highmore, you could do worse than him.
Stewie?
Yeah, I went with Zach McEwen. You got to have some truculence. You got to sell some tickets. He's a guy that can step in, play some physical, skate up and down. He's a capable NHL player, Zach McEwen.
So those are the Canadian squads. What do we got here? Like 14 minutes before we get to Baker. Of all the other teams, and perhaps Tampa, defending Stanley Cup champions, are the most interesting. St. Louis with Vlad Tarasenko there. is certainly an interesting one. The Philadelphia Flyers have a number of big names that are available, but there are big-time contracts attached to them. I think Minnesota is an interesting situation. New Jersey, with players like P.K. Subban, Andreas Janssen, or Will Butcher, are interesting. The Islanders, with Eberle and Bailey, to say nothing of Kiefer Bellows. Borny, we'll start with you. Of all the remaining teams, and Carolina's interesting too, with Jake Bean and Nino Rider.
That's where I'm at.
Is that your most interesting team here? Outside
it
of
is.
Canadian squads?
Nino Niederreiter scored 20 times in 56 games last year. You know,
it's true.
That's pretty close to a 30-goal pace for a guy who's just available to be had. That is not common, you know, around the NHL. But Jake Bean strikes me as one of those guys who, you know, all of a sudden he's got a 10-year career playing in your top four. Like, he's a valuable asset too. So I think that's where I'd be stuck with the most difficulty, but would probably lean towards Jake Bean.
What's interesting
for me,
to you? I got Bean from Carolina too.
Yeah.
I'm going hot take Tuesday guy here too, and I think it's a foregone conclusion that you know, Philadelphia might be losing Shane Gostisbehere, but I'm just trying to think now. Say they're going to go with the veteran guys and they're going to try to go for it year one. I know he's got some term left, a couple more years, but why not Jacob Voracek? He's a guy, I think, with a change of scenery, can be a 25, 50-point guy. So I know at 8.25, that's a little light in the stats for that much money, but I think he's one of those guys. He can regain that 60, 70, 80-point scoring touch that he had in years past.
You know, Philadelphia was interesting, and I think a lot of eyebrows were raised when the list came out and they protected Nicholas Obey-Kubel, and I think we expected to see James Van Riemsdyk there because of contract, Voracek, Shane Gostisbehere as well. I think one of the things we need to keep in mind when it comes to the Philadelphia Flyers is Dave Haxtell is the coach in Seattle now, and Dave Haxtell had all these guys, and you mentioned Shane Gostisbehere, Stewie, and that rookie campaign. Now, I get how he was sheltered and only put in positions where he was going to excel. I get all that. But Haxtell did a great job with Shane Gostisbehere. And he knows Voracek, and he knows Van Riemsdyk. The Voracek one is interesting because he's kind of a polarizing guy. He's a veteran, but he's one of those veterans that you look at and you say, you have a feeling that there's more to give there. You're just waiting for it to come out. And then at a certain point you say, well, maybe it never comes out with Jacob Voracek, or maybe we're past it with Jacob Voracek. I don't know how to read. Essentially what I'm saying here, Borny, is I don't know how to read Voracek.
You know, there's a... This whole trend of like, okay, so Haxtell had guys in Philly, so you think he's going to like player X, Y, or Z. I just think they're better informed on these players. Like, you know, talking about guys that he knows or would have had some impact on. I think Gostisbehere is a great example of someone who did well when he was there. You know, a lot of times, like, you know, he's coming from Toronto too. He's going to know exactly what Kerfoot is, exactly what Dermott is, and he's going to be able to sort of give his input as to those guys. And sometimes he won't like certain players. So experience with guys, I don't think necessarily ties them together. But I do think in the case of those guys, you're right on Voracek, he would be aware of the shortcomings and that cap hit. It's probably concerning. JVR, I don't know. Where do you think he's at in his career? Does he have more good seasons left?
I don't know, man. Around the net, he's fantastic still. Like, in tight, yeah. He's one of the best at scoring goals, still one of the best at tipping pucks. I don't know how to, you know, he's had a nice bounce back. I'd be, like, that's the guy that I put down for Philadelphia, is James Van Riemsdyk. What did you put down, Justin?
Yeah, that's what I have, too. I have JVR there, too. I'm torn on it, though. I can't say I'm 100% sold on my own pick. Stewie, are you there, too?
I went Gostisbehere.
He's got Gostisbehere.
Thinking, go back to Voracek here. And again, there's sort of been something with the media in the last couple of years with this pandemic years that guys haven't been performing at their previous clip that, oh, they're washed up, they're done. And there's certain guys now that have been put up 70 points, 80 points on the regular, and it's just after a couple COVID seasons, you know, they're finished. So that's what I'm saying. In the right situation, some of these guys are going to have bounce-back season. We're talking about the Calgary Flames. If Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau get traded or they're elsewhere, don't be surprised if they're back at 100 points per season too. So I think teams are putting too much emphasis on, hey, you know what, they've underperformed this last year and a half due to the pandemic. Voracek is one of those guys. I would not be surprised. He was three seasons removed from 85 points. I wouldn't be surprised if he returns to 60, 70 point. And they're messing around with his ice time. He was in the media all year, and he still put up 43 points in 53 games. That's a quiet 43 points. So I know you want to see more from him, but I still think he has a lot to give in his career.
So that's Philadelphia. Tampa's an interesting one to me, whether it's Palat or Killorn or Matthew Joseph or Cal Foot. I ended up going with Yanni Gourde, who I think can play higher in the lineup on most NHL teams. Just on Tampa, he's not going to play any higher than third line center. Right. That's why I went with Yanni Gourde with Tampa. Justin, which way did you go?
I mean, if I owned an NHL jersey, it's probably a Yanni Gourde jersey. So I'm pretty easy.
Eh?
Oh man, I just think he's awesome. I love the way he
partying,
plays.
Partying, that's why.
Yeah, that too. But so just so competitive, and you know, ability to get points. You know, I with you, Jeff. He can probably play higher up the lineup. I just love him as a third line center because he can do. You know, the pressure's not on him to score there. But it's an expansion team, and all your guys are their eighth or ninth best players on their team. So yeah, he may be asked to do more. But I'm definitely with you, Gourde, for this one.
Yeah,
what do you think, Stewie?
Yeah,
you got Gourde as well.
Cap hit. Yeah, I think he could slide into a second line scoring role too. He scored 25 goals a couple seasons ago. I would not be surprised if he goes and starts running some numbers if he's taken by the Seattle Kraken and has a bigger role.
Yeah, he's excelled everywhere that he's gone, whether the QMJHL, the AHL, and just in the NHL. Like it's a murderer's or like good luck getting into that top six. Especially as a centerman. Good luck. It ain't going to happen. And that's why I wonder if Yanni Gourde can play higher in Seattle's lineup. And maybe they feel the same way. St. Louis Blues. And there's a couple of interesting choices here. The sexy is Vlad Tarasenko. Now, we all know about the shoulder issues and the surgeries and the fractured relationship between the St. Louis Blues and Vladimir Tarasenko. Vince Dunn is a good young defenseman that can't get into their top four. It seems as if we've been talking about Vince Dunn being traded going back two Christmases ago, where we thought, okay, after the Christmas break and leading into trade deadline, Vince Dunn is going to be moved. I went with Vince Dunn on this one, mainly because of cap space reasons, and that Seattle, just bluntly, as much as they can spend to the cap, won't. At least out of the gate. Which way did you guys lean? The defenseman or the sniping winger, Justin?
Oh, I'm on Tarasenko here. I like Dunn too, but I get worried about a guy who you're waiting for him to come along, and then the team who, you know, knows what he can be, he's in trade rumors. I just worry that they're seeing something we're not. Tarasenko, for me, like a lot of times, you don't want to give a guy like that a UFA deal because you got to do it for 5 years or 6 years or take some huge risk. It's only two seasons left on his deal at 7.5. So I think the potential upside where you have one of the game's most elite goal scorers versus the downside, which is he's kind of a flop for you. At least he's done in 2 years. So I would do it. I would do Tarasenko.
Yeah, I'm a little bit biased too because my brother played with him and he played for him a little bit when they were line mates in St. Louis, and that's Tarasenko as well too. And he scored 40 goals a couple seasons ago. He can run numbers. I still think because he's had these surgeries, that's probably why his value is a little bit down. But we're looking at even other sports right now. During this pandemic, I'm not making excuses, but you look at basketball, all the guys that went down with injuries, and I know he's had a long history of injuries, but again, a motivated Tarasenko, some of these games, when he's on, he's the best player on the ice, regardless of who they're playing. So I think he needs a little bit more consistency. He obviously wants a fresh start, and I can see him getting that in Seattle and maybe being one of the faces of the franchise if he ends up getting picked by them.
You guys have a thought on New Jersey, and the obvious question there is PK Subban, who has 1 year remaining, or whether it's Andreas Johnsson or Will Butcher, etc. Do you guys have a thought on where Seattle may go here with the Devils?
Well, Will Butcher reminds me of the Vince Dunn thing, where like immediately, you know, you heard so much about him and thought he was going to be a superstar, and you start to worry when the team doesn't value him as such. But I just, knowing my experience with Andreas Johnsson, I think he's a lot like Yanni Gourde. He was in the American League anyway. He is a little bit more injury prone, but when healthy, I can see this guy scoring over 20 goals and playing a nice third line or second line winger role for you.
I think you got to go safe eventually, right? And you can't have all these Hot Take Tuesday guys on your team. That's too much of a risk for Hakstol to coach his way out of that one too. So go safe with Will Butcher. Let him go up and down and, you know, play some solid, put up his, you know, 10, 20 point solid defense, make a good first pass too. You can't have all these wild cards on this team for sure.
You guys surprised the Islanders exposed Eberle and Bailey?
I just think that salary cap is really handcuffing them, and they want to make big moves. Lou likes to be aggressive and feels they're close, so I just think they're looking for help on the cap.
Yeah, I think with Lou, Lou's the king of side deals too, so I'm sure he made them a deal saying, hey, you know what, don't worry, guys. We're doing this just as a formality here. Don't worry, you're sticking around.
Colorado Avalanche. The Landeskog situation is interesting right now, and I know Avalanche fans don't want to hear it or talk about it, the idea of losing one of their best players for nothing, which no one anticipated at the beginning of the year, is kind of frightening for Avs fans.
I did.
What's that?
I did. Remember at the trade deadline when I was saying, why don't the Leafs go out and get Landeskog? You said, no, they got a handshake deal. It's a done deal. He's going to Colorado. I mentioned
that,
guys.
I thought he was staying. Honestly, Stewie, I thought all day long that, like, of all the players you looked at, I don't know if you guys do this, the beginning of every year, I try to familiarize myself as much as I can with guys that are going to be unrestricted free agents, and in my own head sort of handicap, okay, which deals are going to be done throughout the year, which deals are going to be done at the end of the year, and which guys are going to be allowed to walk away. And I had Landeskog as being done, you know, at, to me, it could have happened at any day along the way this year. And I'm honestly, I'm stunned that we're at this point right now with Gabriel Landeskog. Like, I don't know about you guys. Like, you know, you just talked about Yanni Gourde a second ago, Justin. Mm-hmm. My favorite player in the NHL might be Gabriel Landeskog. That's how much I love watching this guy. So I'm just stunned that we're here.
I'm not.
No, I heard Elliot say in your show that he doesn't think he's going to get $60 million. It's like,
nope.
8 times 8 is 64, isn't it? Like, I'd give Landy 8 times 8.
I want to tell a quick story here. Like, Colorado is the king of the undercover squeeze, where they just squeeze guys. We saw Duchesne and who else there? O'Reilly as well, too. But even my brother, I think he had 68 points coming off his last year in his entry level. And they said, you know what, we're going to offer you 4 years times 16 million. Sorry, 4 times 4, 16 million. My brother said no. And he hung up his phone, shut his phone down, told his agent to kick rocks. And he was driving in his car. And this is when OnStar just came out. And he got a call. Somehow the GM found his OnStar phone and called him and talked him into taking that deal, where he's like, if they made this much trouble to find my car phone to take this deal, I guess they really want me, and I'll make it up on the next deal here. But they're the king of the squeeze, and I'm not surprised that Landeskog's getting squeezed at all.
I believe that's that to Colorado, the money isn't as much as the term, and they don't want to go 7 or 8 years with Landeskog, who's 28 years old. But I know teams that will. Like, I think we all think that St. Louis, like, listen, Seattle grabs Vlad Tarasenko. You don't think that that $60 million is out there from St. Louis to Gabriel Landeskog? I do.
Right.
I think it's there all day.
I do, too. Yeah, 8 times 7, 5, or 7 times, you know, 8 and change. I can see him getting to 60.
I can see it. Okay, so look forward to the expansion draft. More on what Seattle is poised to do, throwing fish from Pike Place Market to making picks on Wednesday. What is happening with the Kraken? Jeff Baker is going to be joining us here in a couple of moments. We've had him on before from the Seattle Times, covering the Seattle Kraken. More on Kraken Mania here on Hockey Central. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program here Monday to Friday at noon. It's Jeff Merrick, Anthony Stewart, and Justin Bourne. Welcome back to Hockey Central. More on the Seattle Kraken as expansion draft is on the horizon tomorrow. Jeff Baker covers the squad for the Seattle Times. He joins us now. Jeff, good afternoon. How are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm doing great. Thank you. Not a whole lot going on here, so just trying to have a relaxing day.
Yeah, nothing going on much at Seattle. No throwing fish, no speculating on Carey Price. No, it's all good. So before we get to expansion draft talk, you know, we've talked about this a lot this season, and I don't know how privy you are to plans for opening night for the Kraken next season, but have you heard any whispers or mini whispers about raising a banner for 1917 on opening night?
Yes, I've asked them this several times, and the last I heard, they are going to do something to commemorate that. I don't know that they're actually going to raise a banner, but there is talk about some kind of banner with the Metropolitans. hanging in the arena, you know, whether it's going to be center stage the way teams that win Stanley Cups actually do nowadays, or whether it's going to be off to the side, that's still under debate. But they are going to do something to commemorate it, definitely. And that's obviously a touchy subject. I mean, you don't necessarily want to raise a Stanley Cup banner when your current franchise hasn't won anything yet. You know, the Ottawa Senators could do that forever if you go back 100-plus years. But, I mean, it's that's part of the discussion. They're definitely going to do something to commemorate it.
Sure.
But like everything else with the Kraken, there's a lot of stuff up in the air.
Yeah, you know, I just wonder about Seattle, considering it is such a forward-moving franchise, very progressive franchise. I just wonder how much time, because Seattle, listen, Jeff, I don't need to tell you, like, Seattle has a very rich hockey history. I just don't know how much Seattle is going to sort of nod or wink backwards at the history of hockey in Seattle, as opposed to looking forward and charting a new course for the new NHL team.
I do think they're going to lean backwards a bit because, I mean, the one thing that's missing here is a huge knowledge of the hockey history. I mean, it does have an extensive hockey history, but unless you were like a season ticket holder for the Seattle Totems, 50 years ago, and you went and saw them up close, I mean, you're really not all that cognizant of it nowadays. Even with the junior hockey teams here, you know, there's surprisingly little hockey talk on the radio, and at least there has been in the last decade or two. I do think they are going to, and they already have started giving nods to former players. I mean, Guile Fielder of the Totems came up here. He's got a makeshift locker room devoted to him. They replicated his locker stall inside the team's season ticket preview center. I do think they are planning to have Guile Fielder up here for opening night. At least that was the last plans that I heard. I mean, he's 90 years old, so there's a lot of different directions that could go in. But, yeah, no, they are definitely going to look forward, and that's kind of the balancing act they're trying to pull off right now. They don't want to seem disrespectful to all the stuff that came prior, but, this is a new franchise, and they're spending, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on the team and a billion-plus on the arena. They definitely want to make choices that people are looking at.
There's a lot of anticipation and speculation about the expansion draft tomorrow, with the biggest question, what's going on with the goaltenders? There's reports that Chris Drieger might be signing a 3-year deal. So does that make any room for Carey Price? And do you see any, you know, scenarios where he's a member of the Seattle Kraken after tomorrow?
Look, my brain tells me no to answer that question, but then my brain will also remind me that in a situation like this, all bets are off. I mean, you're starting a franchise from scratch. It is going to look to make a splash right away. And sometimes you try to make a splash in sports with things that don't always make perfect sense. You know, it's a lot of it. And believe me, I mean, I've heard that the hockey operations department has all kinds of autonomy on that. At least I've read that other places. You know, that's nonsensical. You're not going to make a decision like this. And I just mentioned the hundreds of millions of dollars at stake. You're not going to make a decision like this that ties up payroll for years on end without everybody weighing in on this. I'm sure Hockey Ops has, you know, the green light to go ahead and pick the players it wants to pick. But somebody has to sign off on that before it actually happens, because you don't want a situation where Ron Francis ties up 13% of your payroll for the next 5 years, and when he might be gone after three of them if this doesn't pan out properly, you know? And so if you're ownership, it's due diligence. You do have to sign up on a franchise-altering course like this if you are taking care of Price. Now, there's a lot we don't know. I mean, we don't know if there's any money that Montreal would retain in a Price salary. We know all the speculation that's going on here, which says that, you know, this was a Price-initiated thing, that Mark Bergevin might be regretting it and all that, but look, I mean, until we know what's actually really happening, with all that other stuff, you know, it's tough to make a call one way or the other. I did a mock draft this morning, and I don't have Carey Price there, and I can't believe in my heart of hearts that with the analytics department of this team having such a huge impact on the process, from everything I've heard internally, they're right up there, you know, arguing in the room with every scout, with every front office person. I can't believe they would sign off on a Price deal, you know, just on its face, just because of all the money it ties up going forward. It doesn't make a whole, there's not a huge analytical argument to make in favor of Carey Price at the moment. I can make a lot of arguments against it. But all that said, you're talking about the face of the franchise, and that's not just an expression. This is a business. It's professional sports. We're not in the NCAA here. We're not in the major, you know, it's not major junior hockey does want to sell tickets. But, I mean, this is big-time professional sports, and it's big money involved. If they think they can make an argument where Price will be valuable to the franchise just in the terms of the recognition value he would bring, I mean, that you can't discount that. So even logical on-ice decisions, you know, Carey Price getting out of the seaplane tomorrow, you know, as he's flown in for the big show, it's going to be on ESPN2. You know, that probably trumps anything that, you know, Philippe Danault or Gabe Landeskog would bring getting out of the same seaplane. So that's got to be taken into consideration. In my brain, though, I tell me they're not going to do it.
Tell us a little bit more about this, how they're going to introduce players. What is the plan? Are they going to strap a parachute to someone? Are they going to land seaplanes? What's happening?
Well, I mean, that was the rumor that was going on. I actually asked somebody from the NHL about that yesterday, and they said, look, the seaplane idea is on the table, but as of right now, it's not officially going to happen. You know, there'd be a lot of coordination that would have to be involved. But, yeah, that was one of the ideas that was tossed around. They want to make this a big, grand thing. So what could be grander than flying a player in on a seaplane? You know, you hope it lands properly. And in the water and not on somebody's house, you know, with all the money that's going to be tied up in some of these guys. But, yeah, it's going to be a big show. So, and they've been talking about this for months now. That's why it's taken so long for the city of Seattle to sign off on all the permits. You know, they're planning some big stuff here. There's going to be 4,000 people out there. And, you know, they've done a good job of building the anticipation for this thing. There's a lot of the cities waiting for it.
With Jeff Baker talking about the Seattle Kraken expansion draft on the horizon tomorrow. Very much looking forward to that. One of the, Jeff, I suppose, most exciting / predictable, maybe boring selections is Mark Giordano from the Calgary Flames. I think everybody expects that to be Ron Francis's decision. But to you, what is the most intriguing team? Like, where do you see Ron Francis having the most difficult decision? Is it, you know, we just talked about Carolina a second ago, Jake Bean versus Nino Niederreiter. You know, there's the Toronto situation, Jared McCann or Alex Kerfoot. Like, are there a couple of teams out there that you look at and you say, Francis is going to have a real tough decision here? Because some of them are obvious, but the majority of them aren't.
Well, I think a tough decision in one way, but it's a decision a lot of people would like to have. I mean, you look at a team like Tampa Bay, you know. I like Yanni Gord. I like the kind of player he is. And I just think he'll bring so many other dimensions beyond stats to that team. But, you know, do you go for an Andre Palat who can put the puck in the net and, you know, automatically gives you some real firepower up there on your top six, either your first line or depending on who else they get, you a second line. I mean, that would be a great thing to have. I mean, you go with the Flyers. Like, you know, you can go Gostisbehere on defense, or you could go with James Van Riemsdyk. And, you know, originally I had James Van Riemsdyk as my pick in my first mock draft, but then I went with the D-man in the second one just to save some money because, you know, if you're going to start bidding on all these free agents, you know, whether you take Carey Price or not, you know, if you're going to go sign a free agent like Danault, that's going to cost you a lot more. You're going to have to overpay a little if you're going to go sign I think they should go get Landeskog, make him the face of the franchise. I mean, but that's going to, you know, that's an 8-year deal. You're going to have to spend some big money. So you can't spend big on everybody. And you know, but there's a lot of flexibility you can take just depending on where these moves go. So I think that's, you know, some other tough decisions that he's going to have to make. You know, in Toronto, you know, it's, you know, it's not a simple decision, but, you know, I think they're just still going to go with Kerfoot. I think there's – I don't know that the Leafs would trade for McCann just with the idea of giving him up. I mean, I've heard that. There might be a side deal involved there. But I like Kerfoot coming to Seattle just and the exposure that Seattle's coaches have had to him prior. I mean, I think that's – you know, that's a good move. But is it an easy decision? I don't know. I mean, that it just depends on some of the things you're looking for. Are you looking for financial flexibility? Are you looking for, you know, a guy who's a more natural center versus, you know, somebody like Kerfoot who might be better suited on the wing? You know, those are all kinds of questions you can ask. I mean, with the Islanders, I went back and forth on a lot of guys, you know, but primarily what it came down to is, you know, I ended up taking Josh Bailey, you know, instead of going with Eberle. It just depends, you know, do you want more versatility from your forward lines, or do you want, you know, the guy who's the better pure scorer? I want versatility in that regard. So these are tough questions he's going to have to answer. The toughest is obviously Carey Price, and maybe he figured that out right away, because if you take Price, it obviously alters everything else you're trying to do. And you know, again, if you're going to go after Landeskog, I think you got to get him signed now during the 72-hour window. I don't think you let him go on the open market and start playing his contract back and forth with everybody. But, I mean, if you know you're going to sign him, that's obviously a big chunk eaten up, and that's going to impact your team. So, but there are those little decisions I just mentioned that come into play, for sure.
No rest for Ron Francis, as he's got free agency a week after tomorrow. So do you see them making a major splash in free agency, or is Ron Francis going to build this roster through trades and the expansion drafts exclusively?
Well, no, he's let it be known that he wants to be a big player on free agency. So I do expect him to come away with at least one free agent. And you know, we're not talking about Driedger. The goalie. I mean, that I expect to see done, Florida goalie by tomorrow night. But I think they are going to try to make a splash with at least one other big guy. I mean, don't forget they have that extra, 8-year max deal they can offer, and they only have a week to do it. And so, it kind of behooves you to take advantage of that, especially when you're building out and you have $81 million of cap space right now. I mean, that's, you can get these deals done, and you can overpay guys and then work the rest of your roster around it. So, yeah, I'd be surprised if he doesn't pull off at least one, you know, free agent deal by tomorrow. One major
Jeff,
one, I should say.
Tell us a little bit about Seattle's attempt to be a different organization. I'm looking at the Twitter page of Chanel, their intersectionality consultant. They've got a climate pledge arena. They've made more diverse hires than a lot of other organizations. It feels like something they're really trying to make a stamp on and be a truly unique organization and different and progressive in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I was just talking with CEO Todd Lewicki about this. When was it? It was Friday. We were having a conversation about this, and you know, he was saying, "Look, you know, you can talk about diversity. You can talk about, you know, do you want to promote this person because of diversity and inclusion reasons? Do you not want to do it?" But the bottom line is, in a league like the NHL, and I completely agree with this. I mean, if you look at the history of the league, it's obviously not a very, it's obviously a very white sport and a white league. So if you're going to let things take their natural process, sometimes it's going to take decades for it naturally to work out where you're going to get more inclusivity. I mean, if you want to actually make a change, you sometimes have to force the issue. And, you know, I'm not saying they're going to go out and hire like the worst candidate for every spot, but they're really making a concerted effort. Whereas if there are two candidates that are roughly equal and, you know, rough, you can determine it any way you want, define that any way you want. But if they're roughly equal, I think they are going to go with, the BIPOC candidate or the female to try to just get diversity going. You know, I mean, you can talk about it and just let it continue the way it is for the next 20 years, or you can actually actively try to do something about it. And I think in cases like these, you do have to actively do something about it. And it's the same in my industry. It's the same in the journalism field. You know, are there people that have been promoted, let's say, over other people because, you know, who might not have the talent, but they recognize that that talent could go somewhere in the future, and they're getting an opportunity because they're from a minority group that isn't well represented in my industry? Yeah, that happens all the time. I understand it, you know, and it might end up costing me in my career at some point, but I understand it, because if you just, and I taught journalism in school, in university for years, I mean, and you know, I know exactly what the population of my students look like, and it wasn't very diverse. So if you're going to wait for it to naturally unfold, it's never going to happen. You sometimes have to push the issue on things like this, and that's exactly what the Kraken are doing. And it's obvious they're doing. And, I mean, they are literally forcing people into prominent positions that, you know, they might have had to wait 10 years for if they – or 5 years for. I don't want to insult them. 5 years for if they were just waiting their turn in line. But some of them are getting the opportunity now. I think it's a good thing. I think, I do think that you have to push the envelope a little bit if you're going to actually enact any real change in something. And they certainly have done that. I mean, they're not just hiring people in meaningless positions. I mean, they're putting people – look, Cammy Granato. She went to my university, Concordia University in Montreal. She went there, played there, outstanding hockey player. You know, so does she deserve a job as a pro scout over an NHL player? I can make that argument, yeah. I mean, she played hockey at a top level for her position and for her standing as a female hockey player. She was the best of the best. So there's somebody who was like a fourth-line center in the NHL and really, you know, didn't have that much talent to begin with. Does he deserve a job just because he went and got smacked around more on an NHL surface where they have checking? Or does Tommy Granato understand hockey because she played it at the highest level for the women's game? I mean, hockey is hockey. So whether it doesn't matter that a man who weighs 200 pounds might be able to destroy her on the ice, that's got nothing to do with anything. Does she understand the game of hockey? And so, you know, they're looking at things like this. And you know, I can make a very good argument for why Cammy Granato should be a pro scout, which she is over dozens of former NHL players. You either know the game or you don't. So I think they're really looking at issues like this.
This is, I agree with you 100%. This is basic social capital theory. The more diverse voices and faces you have around, the better that good ideas can rise and can be disseminated and spread quickly. To me, like ultimately at the end of all of that, Jeff, it just makes good business sense to operate your organization like that. I agree 100%. We are up against the clock, Jeff. Thanks so much for stopping by. Tomorrow, another huge day for the Seattle Kraken. We will be waiting with bated breath to see who the fish turns over at Pike Place Markets and who the fish says Seattle will select. Thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, anytime, guys.
There he is, Jeff Baker from the Seattle Times, covering the Seattle Kraken. Tomorrow is NHL Expansion Day. Should be a fascinating one. And there are a number of questions, and the biggest is still, at the end of it, will Carey Price still be a member of the Montreal Canadiens or the Seattle Kraken? That answer tomorrow. Meanwhile, quick break. More Hockey Central in moments. You're listening to Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to the program. I want to thank Jeff Baker for stopping by. NHL expansion tomorrow. We'll find out the inaugural roster of the Seattle Kraken will look like. It's a fascinating one. Like all of it, at every single level. You know, we didn't even get to a lot of the... Listen, we may see two Flurries selected here by the Seattle Kraken. Cale Flurry from Montreal, Aiden Flurry from Anaheim. This could be a fascinating one. Borny, I know you're looking forward to it. Give me a sleeper story you love right now.
Landeskog. Get Landeskog to the Kraken. Give him 8 years, $8 million per season. Captain of your Seattle Kraken.
That is a juicy one. Stewie, you got a good sleeper Seattle story you're watching?
Not before the end. I'm put on the spot, but I'll end off by saying go Leafs go.
All right. There we go. Back tomorrow.